It is. It's May not 31st. Yet June 1st.
It's
the 31st.
I wrote 31 June.
May 31st.
I'm in a hurry for school to be out.
And it is the day after Shavuos. And we are ready to begin on page 212 in our Chumash class, Creation. Ready to begin Perek Lamed Tes, chapter 39. Before we do, I would like to share with you one last observation from the story of Yehuda and Tamar, which I thought of last week, but forgot. Well, we ran out of time. I wasn't able to tell you about it then. This is pure speculation, but it actually, I think, is nice, and well, you'll use your own judgment about it. In the if you go back to page 208, which is where the story began, in the beginning of Perek Lamed Ches, chapter 38. So we pointed out then that it says, "Vayhi bo'esahi," it was that time, "Vayered Yehuda me'esachav." Yehuda went down from his brothers. He was demoted. "Vayet ad ish adulami ushmo chira." And he turned to a man who was an Adulami, and his name was Chira. Now the word Adulami is a funny word. Adulami sounds like he was an Adulamite. How do they say it here?
Adulamite.
The thing is that we don't know what an Adulamite is. That would imply that there is either a city called Adulam or a nation called Adulam. To my knowledge, we're not familiar with
be a place, because it says in the commentary, settled in Adulam.
Yeah, okay. But we don't know where that is. What is this?
It's on the map anyway.
You know, what is this Adulam place? So, and even if it is a specific place, it's curious that the Torah has to tell us it, especially since the Torah stresses it several times. It says it here, and then it says it later in Yehuda, at the bottom of this page, where it says, in Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, the days became many, and Bas Shua, the wife of Yehuda, died. Yehuda was consoled. And he went up on the shearing, those who sheared the sheep. He and Chira, his friend, the Adulamite, to Timnah. So it tells us again that he was from Adulam. On the next page as well, when he has to send the goat to Tamar, in Pasuk Chav, verse 20, it says, "Vayishnach Yehuda eskedi ho'izim." Yehuda sent the goat, "Biyad re'ehu ha'adulami," in the hands of his friend, the Adulami. It doesn't even say his name that time, it just says he's the Adulamite. So, what is this emphasis on Adulam? Adulami. So, we know that Yehuda was demoted. And in this story, because of the fact that he ends up admitting to that he's the one who lived with Tamar, that becomes his claim to fame. Now he is promoted in everybody's eyes because he was willing to admit. When he says in Pasuk Chav Vav 26 on page 212, "Vayakir Yehuda," Yehuda recognized the collateral. "Vayomer," and he said, "Sadkami many." She was more righteous than me, or she was righteous, and it is from me that she became pregnant. Because I did not give her to Shela, my son. So, with that admitting, he then became elevated in everybody's eyes, because that was an act of righteousness that he was willing to admit.
Where do you see that he was?
That is the fact, and you don't see it from the verse. That is the fact that Chazal said that he was then that he was elevated in everybody's eyes because he was willing to admit. His name Yehuda comes from the word moda, to admit, and that's part of where it comes from. So, it seems to me possibly that the emphasis on the word Adulami is because on page 208 he was demoted, and he turned to a man who was an Adulami. And that lasts until he is promoted with this admitting. When he admits on page 212 in Pasuk Chavav 26, that is precipitated by Tamar saying to him in Pasuk Chafei 25, Vatomer, and she said, Hakirna, recognize now, to whom is this signet ring, this wrap, and this staff? Who do they belong to? It seems to me that the Hebrew Adulami can be broken up to Ad Lemi, until Lemi. Lemi means to whom. You see in Pasuk Chavav 25? In 25 it says, Hakerna Lemi Hachosemes Vapasilim Amata Ha'ela. The fourth line on the page, the last word on the line. Lemi. I wonder if the emphasis in Adulami is that Yehuda fell, he was demoted, and he turned to a man who was an Adulami, which means he was demoted Ad until Lemi. Until Tamar said to him, Lemi Hachosemes Vapasilim V'hamate ha'ela. Until that point, he was demoted until that point, until Tamar said to him, to whom are these signet ring, wrap, and staff? And when he admitted, then he was promoted. He was reinstated to his position. And it was ad lemi, until that point where Tamar challenged him and said, to whom do they belong? Yeah?
I keep wondering, why do you think it has to mention in here the name Thera?
Yeah, so that could be.
We have to know that.
That could be because later in history, as we learned in Yechezkel, then you have Chira Melech Tzur, and some say it's the same person, and that could be why his name is mentioned. Yes.
So when you mentioned his admitting, I also knowing how David is, King David is, I think one of these. It's not the most prominent emblem of David is admitting, soulfully admitting, which is amazing for a king.
Right.
That he gets that from his father.
Yeah. And it's it runs in the family. His great great grandmother's 11 generations earlier, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's,
it could very well be.
That's part of our heritage, to be able to admit we made a mistake.
It could be. It could be that that's
it's
what it is.
Very hard to do.
Very hard to do, especially for a king, like you said. Yeah. Okay. Chapter 39, Lamites. Bottom of page 212. So we interrupted the story of Yosef to describe the story of Yehuda, and now we go back to Yosef. And we had left Yosef when he had been sold into slavery. So now the Torah picks up the story again. The Yosef Hurad Mitzrayim, Yosef was brought down to Egypt. Vayiknehu Potiphar Srisparo, and he was purchased by Potiphar, the officer of Paro. Sara Tabachim, the chief of the Tabachim, which could mean the chief butcher of animals, or could mean the chief executioner of Paro. Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man, Miyana Yishmaelim, from the hands of the Yishmaelim, Asher Horiduhu Shama, that brought him down to there. Vayihi Hashem es Yosef, Hashem was with Yosef. Vayihi Ishmatzliach, he was a man who was successful. Vayihi Beveis Adonav Amitzrin, he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Vayar Adonav, and his master saw, Ki Hashem, he told that Hashem was with him. Vachol Asher Huo said, everything that he would do, Hashem Matzliach Biado. Hashem would make successful in his hands. Vayimtza Yosef chen be'inav, and Yosef found favor in his eyes, vayasharis oso, and he served him. Vayafkidei wal be'so, and he put him in charge of his house. V'chol yashlon osam v'yodo, and everything that he had, he put in his hands. Vayihin it was, me'ot hifkid oso be'so, from the time that he appointed him over his household. V'al kol asher yashlo, and on all that he had. Vayavarach Hashem es beis ha'mitzri, and Hashem blessed the house of the Egyptian Biglal Yosef on account of Yosef. And the blessing of Hashem was in all that he had. Babayis in the house, Uvasadan in the field. Vayazov kol ha'shelo biyad Yosef, and he left everything he had in the hands of Yosef. V'lo yadai tomu uma, and he didn't know anything about that was with him. He left it all in Yosef's hands and did not pay attention to what was going on. Ki im halecha mashu ho'chel, with the exception of the bread that he was eating. Vayihi Yosef, yifei soar, yifei mare, and Yosef was, how do they translate this, handsome of form and handsome of appearance. Yosef was a beautiful person. This is the same language, yifei toar, yifei mare, that it says about Yosef's mother, Rachel. She was yifas toar, yifas mare. That's what it says back in Parashas Vayetze. The same language is said about his mother, Rachel, and it seems that Yosef got the beauty of Rachel. On page 150, it says, in Pasuk Yud-Zayin 17, it says, Veinei Leah Rakos, the eyes of Leah were weak, for Rachel ha'isa yifas toar v'yifas mare, Rachel was beautiful of form and beautiful of appearance. And so Yosef has the same description, he's yifei soar v'yifei mare.
Isn't form and appearance the same thing?
So, Rashi says one is the shape and the other is the glow. Now, this begins the pattern of Yosef. Yosef will be successful at whatever he touches. Wherever he goes, he is successful. He seems to have a golden touch. Here, when he's the slave of Potiphar, he has a meteoric rise to becoming the head of his household. When later he'll be thrown into jail, he will rise to become the chief prisoner. And then, of course, when he becomes the viceroy of Egypt, he, of course, is in charge of everything. Yosef seems to be unable to fail, at least once he's in a particular place. Of course, he's going to have a few significant bumps along the road. He's going to end up in jail after he's a slave. But wherever he is, he rises to prominence. This is Yosef. Yosef does not stay down for long. Yosef is not does not wallow in depression or crying over spilled milk. Once he's in a particular place, he didn't want to get sold. But once he's there, he says, okay, I'm here, but now I'm going to make the best of it. And he rises to prominence. He's thrown in jail, so I'm going to make the best of it. He rises to prominence. That's Yosef. Now, a few points about this. The next thing that's going to happen is, of course, the whole episode with Potiphar's wife. And that's a whole discussion in and of itself. But before we get to that, we have several things to discuss in this opening. It's really an introduction to Yosef's travels through Egypt. First of all, in the first pasuk on 2:12, it says Yosef was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, the officer of Paro, purchased him, the chief butcher and the Egyptian man, from the hands of the Yishmaelim that had brought him down to there. You notice the emphasis of the word hurad, brought down. It says it twice. Yosef was brought down to Egypt, and he was purchased by Potiphar from the Yishmaelim who had brought him down to there. So there is an emphasis on being brought down. We pointed this out, that when Yosef was thrown into the pit, there are many pits mentioned over there in that story. We talked about that at the time. And we said how Yosef had to be dropped into a pit before he could rise to greatness. Yosef had to go through a period of time where he was down, where he was low, where he would apparently learn what he needed to learn in order to then rise to great prominence. He will be thrown back into a pit when he's thrown into jail. Their jails were not places where you got three square meals a day and where there was an exercise room.
Yeah.
Their jails were literally pits in the ground. That's what they were. They were not pleasant places at all. And that's where Yosef will end up again after the episode with Potiphar's wife. But here in this first pasuk, the emphasis on being brought down. Yosef was brought down to Egypt. He was purchased. He was brought down to Egypt and he was purchased by Potiphar from the Ishmaelim who had brought him down. The Torah always tells us that Eretz Yisrael is Gavoa Mikol Ha'aretz, so it's higher than all other lands, and Egypt is always going down from Israel. What it means that it's higher than all other lands is difficult to understand from a scientific perspective, but so it's hard to know. It seems that it does not only mean spiritually, but even physically, so I don't know in what way the Torah is measuring height, but certainly not from sea level. But be that as it may, the language is always, when you leave Israel, you're going down, and when you're going to Israel, you're going up. As we say, a person makes aliyah, they go up to Israel.
We say down south, you know, for the south.
We say down south, right. But it would be considered going down even if you go north from Israel. It would still be considered going down. But that's the emphasis. The emphasis is on the fact that it was going down. He was purchased by Potiphar. Now, notice how many times the Torah chooses to tell us that Yosef was involved with Egypt and Egyptians. In Pasuk Aleph, the first verse, it says, Yosef was brought down to Egypt, and he was purchased by Potiphar, the officer of Paro, the chief butcher, an Egyptian man. That, well, we knew, I mean, if he's Paro's officer, and Yosef happens to be in Egypt, you would expect that he's an Egyptian man. There's an emphasis here that Potiphar was an Egyptian man. In the next pasuk, it says, Hashem was with Yosef, and he was successful, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. In case you forgot that Potiphar was an Egyptian, the Torah chooses to emphasize, you should know he was an Egyptian. Later again, in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, it says that is from the time that Yosef was appointed, that Potiphar had appointed Yosef over his household and in all that he had, and it says Hashem blessed the house of the Egyptian because of Yosef. Could have said the house of Potiphar. Mm-hmm. It could have said his house with a pronoun. But instead it says the house of the Egyptian. There's an emphasis on Egypt. Hold that thought for a moment. We're going to get back to that. What is this emphasis on Egypt? The way the Torah describes Yosef's rise to greatness in Potiphar's house is incremental. Notice, and this is the way that I believe it's the Or HaChaim HaKadosh that says this, that first it says in Pasuk Beis, verse 2, it says, Vayi Hashem es Yosef, Hashem was with Yosef, Vayihi ish matzliach, and he was successful. Vayihi beveis Adon av Hamitzri, and then he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. So, I believe it's the Or HaChaim who points out that the run-of-the-mill slaves, the rank-and-file slaves, worked in the field. That's where the bulk of the slaves worked. Only a few slaves had the privilege of working in the house, which was considered to be a more refined work than working in the field. If a man had 100 slaves, so 95 were in the field, 5 were in the house, but they were mostly in the field. So first it says that Hashem was with Yosef, he became successful, and therefore he was promoted to household work rather than field work. Then it says, Vayara donov ki Hashem ito, his master saw that Hashem was with him. Rashi says, Shem Shamayim Shagor Befiv. He noticed that Hashem's name was always on Yosef's lips. Whenever he spoke, Yosef spoke, it was always Be'ezos Hashem, Emiritz Hashem, Baruch Hashem. He was constantly invoking Hashem's name. That's what it means, that Hashem was always with him. And everything he did, Hashem was making it successful. Otherwise, how would he have known that it was Hashem who was making Yosef successful? Had Yosef not constantly invoked Hashem's name, then this Egyptian would not have known anything about Hashem. But because Yosef constantly spoke about Hashem, you know, if the Egyptian said, "Nice job, Yosef," Yosef would say something like, "It's in the hands of Hashem," or "Baruch Hashem," or something like that. So the Egyptian began to realize that it is Hashem who is making Yosef successful. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Yosef found favor in the eyes of the Egyptian, and he served him. The Arachayim HaKadosh says that then Yosef became promoted not only to household work, but to be the direct slave of Potiphar, his immediate servant. That would be the most elevated of all work that a slave can do, would be to serve the master directly. And then, he appointed him over his household. Everything he had, he put in his hands. He put Yosef, not only did he serve Potiphar directly, but he made Yosef in charge of all of the work that went on in the house. Yosef became the chief slave, who would then be in charge of what work would get done by whom. He became in charge of that. Then it says, and it was from the time that he appointed him over his household, and on all that he had, and Hashem blessed the house of the Egyptian because of Yosef, and the bracha of Hashem was in all that he had, both in the house and in the field. So finally, Pasuk Vav becomes the ultimate promotion. Vayazov kol ha'shelo b'yad Yosef. He left everything that he had in the hands of Yosef. That Potiphar didn't even check Yosef's work anymore. Where initially, when he appointed Yosef over his household, he kept an eye out on him. He looked over his shoulder. But it got to a point where Yosef was just so good, and everything was going so well, everything was clicking so well. Potiphar became wealthier and wealthier, and more successful and more successful. All of that he had, his crops would grow, his flock increased, his house became a better run house. He became wealthier, gold, silver, etc. So he said, I don't have to check Yosef. Everything has gone great. I don't need to bother. And he just said, forget it. Yosef's in charge. Yosef's running the show. And he just forgot about it. He just said, I'll just eat, drink, and be merry. Let Yosef run the show. I don't need to be involved. And therefore, he entrusted Yosef with everything and didn't even check. He didn't balance the books. He said, let Yosef handle everything. Except except for the bread that he ate. That's the only thing that Potiphar kept an eye on, was the bread that he ate. Rashi tells us that this is a mashal, this is a parable. It does not mean the bread that he ate, but it meant his wife. The only thing that Potiphar was wary of and did not entrust Yosef with was his wife. That was the one thing. The Medrash tells us the reason for this is not because of Yosef as much as his wife. Yosef was a very good looking person, as the Pasuk then says. Yosef was Yafei Sar Yafei Mara, and Potiphar was concerned that his wife would take an interest in Yosef, which is in fact what happened. And so that's the only thing that he was concerned about. We will see when the episode with Potiphar's wife happens with Yosef that Potiphar really understood that it was not Yosef who had attempted to seduce Potiphar's wife, but rather it was the reverse. It was Potiphar's wife who initiated this interaction. He understood that, which is how we'll see that's going to help Yosef in the end, even though Potiphar won't admit to it openly. So this is his rise to greatness in Potiphar's house. Why the emphasis on the Egyptian? Egyptians, Egypt, the man who was an Egyptian, why this emphasis?
Could be because the morality in his home was always so low, to put an emphasis on it, that he always saw that he always saw the image of his father and protected him.
Okay,
coming to that.
That's true. We will see that his father's image will protect him from Potiphar's wife, and it is true that the decadence of Egypt was horrible. However,
is there also a parallel with at each time that the Torah mentions that Yosef was brought down?
Well, in the beginning it does say that, but afterwards it then...
Did you go together, being brought down, okay, and being in Egypt?
Okay, so what you're both saying is the Torah is painting us a picture, right, of Yosef not only being a slave, but also being in a place which was not a spiritual place to be, not a good place to be spiritually, and yet
not
Yosef...
Not a place for him to be.
And yet Yosef remained steadfast in his belief in Hashem. He constantly mentioned Hashem's name, invoked Hashem's name. Yosef was a person who stayed close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We do see from here that one method of maintaining one's closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when one is not in a good environment is to make sure that Hashem's name is on your lips. To constantly say, Be'ezras Hashem, Mirtz Hashem, Baruch Hashem, right? To constantly invoke Hashem, include Hashem in your conversation, your daily conversation, is a way of staving off some significant negative influences that could arise. Yeah?
I was just thinking, I might be completely wrong, but is there an emphasis also on the mitzvah? Maybe his someone in his family later on in the future is the one that Moshe kills? Is there a relation maybe to this?
None that I know of.
Oh, okay.
None that I know of. Okay, that's a good guess, but none that I know of. Yeah.
The emphasis being not on Yosef, but on Klal Yisrael, that this was going to be the start of their descent down.
Okay, that's a good possibility. We know that this is the beginning of the Jews becoming slaves in Egypt. This is how we ended up there, because Yosef goes down, the brothers will follow him down, and then eventually we will end up in Egypt for 210 years. So that could be the emphasis on Egypt. I've mentioned to you in the past, particularly with Pesach, that Yosef and the Egyptians are two sides of the same coin. Yosef is particularly he fits in with Egypt. We know that the primary avodah zarah, the primary idolatry of Egypt, was the calf, was the egel, as the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Egla yefeifia Mitzrayim, that Egypt is a beautiful calf. The reason why the Jews worshipped a golden calf after Matan Torah is because that was the idolatry that they were most familiar with, because that was the primary idolatry of the Egyptians. In fact, Rashi tells us in Parashas Kisisa that how did the gold that Aaron threw into the fire, how did that magically turn into a golden calf? One of the explanations is because the Egyptians who were there, the Erev Rav, who tagged along with Moshe when they left Egypt, those Egyptians came and used their witchcraft, their black magic, to turn the gold into a golden calf. The other explanation for how the gold magically turned into a golden calf is because when it was time to leave Egypt and Moshe had to take the coffin of Yosef with him, but he couldn't get it out of the Nile. He didn't know where it was, and Serach Bas Asha told him that it was buried, it was sunk into the Nile. So he took a piece of parchment, and wrote on the parchment Hashem's name, and he wrote on the parchment Alei Shor, arise, O ox, or bull. And he threw it into the Nile, and up came Yosef's coffin, because Yosef is compared to a bull. Bechor Shoro, he's considered the firstborn bull. That is what Yosef is always compared to, a bull, a shor. And so that's how Yosef came out. Yosef's body was pulled out of the Nile. But then Michal, who was an idolater, was there, took the parchment with him. And then when Aaron threw the gold into the fire, he took that parchment and threw it into the fire, and out came a golden calf. And so the two explanations of how the gold turned into a calf were either the Egyptians themselves did it with their witchcraft, or the parchment that had gotten Yosef out of the Nile is the parchment that then transformed the gold into a golden calf. So, what are those two explanations Rashi is saying? Rashi is saying that a calf, a golden calf, can be associated with the Egyptians, or it can be associated with Yosef. Because Yosef and the Egyptians are two sides of the same coin. They both represent the koyach, the strength of the bovine family. Either a golden calf, which is a negative thing, which is an idolatry, or the shor, the bull, which represents Yosef. It's also the fact that when Yosef was taken from his father, the last thing that they had studied together was Egla Arufa, was the rule about killing the calf if there is a person who is found on the road in a Jewish, in Israel, if there is a person found on the road who has been murdered and it's not known who did it. The Torah tells us that you measure to the nearest city and the elders of that city have to take a calf and they have to kill this calf. That's called an Egla Arufa. And that's the last thing Yosef had learned with his father Yaakov when he was sold into slavery, which is why later we will see that when he wants to impress upon his father that he's still alive, he sends his father Agalos, which means wagons. But the reason why he sends his father wagons is to emphasize the connection between the word Agalos and Egel, that I'm still here. I still, not only am I alive, but I remember the last thing we've studied together, which was Egla Arufa. That also is not coincidental, because that also involves a calf, and Yosef represents the strength of the calf, of the bull, of the cow. That's what Yosef represents. We talked about before Pesach what that strength is, and perhaps we'll talk about it again, particularly when we get to the dreams of Paro, where he's going to dream about seven cows, seven skinny cows, seven fat cows. When we get to that, perhaps we'll talk about it then. But suffice it for now to say that Yosef and the Egyptians are cut from the same cloth. The Egyptians use the strength of the cow, the calf, for idolatry, whatever that strength is, and Yosef uses it for serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for good. And so there's an emphasis here on Egypt. He was in Egypt, his master was an Egyptian man, the house of the Egyptian, Yosef is in Egypt. And it's being emphasized over and over again that Yosef is fully, fully ensconced in Egypt, both in Egypt with an Egyptian master, an Egyptian home, because Yosef represents that strength, the very same strength that the Egyptians are using in a perverted way. Yosef is going to use it in a positive, in the right way, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Yosef showing up in Egypt, he's in the right place for him. Not that they're doing the right thing in Egypt, but there he has the power to take his strength and make it great. He can become, he can project his greatness in Egypt more than anywhere else. I don't mean as opposed to Eretz Yisrael, but as opposed to anywhere else outside of Eretz Yisrael, Yosef is in the place that is most likely where he, for him to succeed. And that's what happens. He's constantly successful in Egypt. It seems to me that's part of the reason why the word Egypt is stressed so much. The other reason for the stress of the word Egypt is because the Mefarshim say that the word Mitzrayim comes from the root Meitzar, Mem Tzadi Resh. Meitzar means boundary, bounded. Egypt was a place of boundaries where people were bounded in. It was very difficult to escape from Egypt. When the Jews got out of Egypt, it was the first time that any group of slaves had ever successfully escaped from Egypt. That's one of the things that shocked Yisro. Yisro was amazed, astonished that the Jews were able to escape in such great numbers, because Egypt was Meitzar, was something which you were bounded in, you couldn't break out of. The natural boundaries of Egypt were so forbidding that it was very difficult for anybody to get out of Egypt. You had, to the north, you had the Mediterranean, and to the south, you had desert, and every direction you had either desert, or you had rapids, or you had whatever. It was just very difficult for anybody to get away from Egypt.
Are you allowed to visit Egypt today?
What's that?
Are you allowed to visit Egypt?
Are you allowed to visit Egypt today? That's a different question. There's a pasuk in the Torah which seems to say you're not allowed to go back to Egypt. But we know that the Rambam lived in Egypt. So I'm not sure what the conclusion is on that discussion about being able to go back or not being able to go back. Apparently you can. The question only is where, how, when. I'm not sure. I've never been there.
I'm not planning on it.
He was adapted to the Pharaoh.
Huh?
Hasn't he adapted to the
yeah,
Pharaoh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're on the list. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She said he was, the Rambam was the chief. Yeah, but it wasn't the Pharaohs. There were Muslims already over there. But
guess who's going to Egypt next week?
Huh?
Guess who's going to Egypt next week?
Who's going to go?
President, yeah.
Oh, president. Yeah, okay. All right. So this is Yosef in Egypt in the house of Potiphar. Now, was Potiphar the chief executioner or the chief butcher? This is a discussion amongst the commentaries. Some say he was, as I said, the chief butcher. Some say the chief executioner. This is something which if we remember, we will discuss it a little bit later, what was Potiphar's main role in the court of Paro. But that's something to bear in mind, that Potiphar had a major position. Whatever he was, it was a major position. Today, you would say you have the minister, what do we call them in America? The minister of defense. We call them the secretary of defense. Thank you. Secretary of state, secretary of defense, cabinet. Secretary of the treasury.
Cabinet.
Right, cabinet posts. This was a major cabinet post. Whether it means the chief butcher or the chief executioner, just as we have later on with the dreams of the butler and the baker, they were also significant posts in Paro's cabinet, the chief butler and the chief baker. So they're all significant posts. So you have to think of them, even though to us, a butler, a baker, a butcher, they don't seem so important. But you have to substitute for us words like Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of the Treasury, etc. That's what these people represented. We're up to Pasuk Zion, verse 7. It was after these things, and the wife of his master raised her eyes to Yosef, and she said, you should have a relationship with me. So she openly pursued him. Why did this happen? The words that this pasuk begins with, "Vayehi achar ha-devarim ha'ele," it was after these things. Sometimes you have "Vayehi achar ha-devarim ha'ele." Sometimes you have "Vayehi acharei ha-devarim ha'ele." Sometimes achar, sometimes acharei. They mean the same thing. After these things, Rashi tells us. Achar means immediately after the above mentioned story. Acharei means a little bit later. So if you see achar, that it happened immediately after the above mentioned story, the Torah is trying to tell us it happened because of the above mentioned story. So what happened in the above mentioned story that would cause his Potiphar's wife to pursue Yosef? So Chazal tell us that Yosef, when he was sold into slavery, so he was forced to move away from, and I use this word very, very, I use this word with much trepidation, but some of the immaturity that he had when he was in his father's house, I use that word with much trepidation, because as I mentioned at the time when we learned it, it's not that Yosef was immature by our standards. He was not some little kid, some teenager who was acting up. He was far more mature than we are. His mind was in the right place, and he was not a person who was a slave to his own desires and his own pettiness. But for what Hashem's expectations of him were, the expectations Hashem had of him, those expectations he was not living up to. Vis-a-vis those expectations, he was quote-unquote immature. And here, when he was sold into slavery, he was forced away from those immaturities. And then over here, once he started to become successful again, He was Yafei Sar Yafei Mare. He was very good looking. The Chazal tell us he began to do those actions of Narus, of a young boy again, which means he began to dote on himself, on his looks. He would fix his hair and take care of himself in ways that for him were unacceptable. Again, we're not talking about the teenagers of today, but for who Yosef was, it was unacceptable for him to be involved with his own looks in this way, because his father, he knew, was in great distress. His father was mourning his loss. So Hashem says, figuratively, your father is in pain, and you're fixing your hair? That's not acceptable. So Hashem had him knocked down yet again. He had been sold into slavery, which knocked him down the first time. And now, apparently, he didn't quite get the message. And so Hashem knocks him down yet again. And Potiphar's wife is going to pursue him, which will land him in jail, which will be yet another being demoted. And so that's why it happens immediately after the above mentioned story. Yeah.
Is there any discussion of Joseph being aware of why these things are happening to him?
I think he must have figured it out. You know, Yosef being who he was, I imagine he figured it out. But it doesn't tell us. The message would be lost if he didn't figure it out.
Why is she not given a name? This is what she's particularly like. You never have a name for her.
It could be because that's the whole issue over here. The fact that she is a married woman. And that could be the issue. I don't know. Don't know the answer. Now, our sages tell us that Potiphar's wife, her kavana, her intention was l'shem shamayim, was for the sake of heaven. Our sages tell us, just as Tamar, her intention with Yehuda was l'shem shamayim, was for the sake of heaven, Potiphar's wife also had intentions that were good. Why? Because she somehow knew that her astrologers told her, she knew that someone in her family would marry Yosef. And Yosef will eventually marry who?
Her daughter.
Okay, it doesn't say her daughter, but Potiphar's daughter, Asnas. Now, Chazal tell us, Potiphar's daughter, Asnas, was not biologically Potiphar's daughter. Okay, she was really that when Dina was forced into a relationship with Shechem, back in Parshas Vayishlach, she became pregnant from that relationship and had a daughter. And that daughter, because she was Shechem's daughter, was sent away. And that daughter ended up in Egypt and was adopted by Potiphar, and eventually marries Yosef. So that's who it ended up being. However, the wife of Potiphar only knew there would be a woman from her family. And so she said, why not me? And that's why she pursued Yosef. It was wrong. She was wrong. She's a married woman. She can't go pursue Yosef. But she did it because it wasn't just on a whim. It was because of this knowledge, which was in fact correct.
Did Yosef know that Asnat was Jewish before?
It's irrelevant whether she was Jewish or not, as we've mentioned, because there's no Judaism yet, because there's no Torah yet. It's all a question of marrying into the family. He did know that she was a worthy woman. He knew that she was a tzaddikah. She was righteous.
Didn't she have a medal or something saying that?
Yeah, that's what the Medrash says. The Medrash says something like that. That there was, well, we'll see when we get to Asnas. Please, I'll look into that. Just get the exact story of that, of Asnas. The Medrash says that Yosef was exceedingly handsome. That the wife of Potiphar found it to be a very great challenge to stay away from Yosef. That she would tell her friends that Yosef, that this slave was incredibly handsome, and she would describe him like as being superhuman, and her friends would not believe her. So she said, okay, come to my house, I'll show you. And then she would bring them to her house, and she would put them in the kitchen and give them knives and have them cut vegetables. And then she would call Yosef to walk into the room. And Yosef would walk into the room, and they would all look up, and they wouldn't realize they would cut themselves. And then after he walked out of the room, she said, look at your hands. And their hands would be all cut up. And that was how handsome Yosef was. Now, whether the Medrash means this literally or not is not really relevant. The point the Medrash is trying to make is that Yosef was beyond just handsome. He was really, really an attractive person, and it was very difficult for the wife of Potiphar to stay away from him. And that's why Potiphar himself was not willing to entrust his wife with Yosef. He understood that this was something very dangerous, that his wife could easily be susceptible. And so she pursues Yosef. Pazik says,
so he gave her the opportunity.
Well, not yet. Yeah, not yet. Yeah, we're going to get to that. Okay. Right, you're right. But we'll get to that. In Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vayimain, and he refused. Vayomer Elisha Sadonov, and he said to the wife of his master, Hin Adoni lo yada iti mababoyis, my master doesn't know what's with me in the house, which means he doesn't pay attention to anything I do. V'chol asher yeshlona sabiyadi, everything he has he put in my hands. Einenu gadol babayis hazeh mimeni, there's no one greater in this house but me. V'lo chasach mimeni meuma, he has not held back anything from me. Ki im osach, except for you, ba'asher at ishto, because you're his wife. V'eich e'eseh hara'ah gedolo hazos, how could I do this great evil? V'chatasi le'elokim, and I will have sinned to God. So Yosef says two reasons why he can't follow through with what the wife of Potiphar wants. Number one, he says it would betray the trust of my master. My master has trusted me with everything. And how could I possibly betray his trust? That's not right. In other words, forget the fact that I am a God-fearing person. You don't betray someone's trust. Number two, it would be a sin to God. I can't sin against God. And so Yosef refuses. Now let's understand how difficult it was for Yosef to refuse. Because whether he was attracted to her or not is not the point. The Torah never tells us that she was an attractive woman. That may be or may not be. But that's irrelevant. Yosef is under the control of his master. And she's his wife. She's the wife of the master. She really can control Yosef's destiny. She, as the Medrash tells us, she threatened Yosef, I'll have you locked in chains. I'll have you bent over and tied down so you can't sit up straight. And she threatened him. And he would constantly respond, Hashem matir asurim. Hashem unbinds those who are tied up. Hashem zokef kefufim. Hashem straightens out those who are bent. He would constantly say back, Hashem will protect me from you. But these were real threats. She could have really hurt him. She could have really made his life miserable, or even perhaps killed him. And these were not empty threats. And so it was dangerous for him to resist the wife of Potiphar. A slave nation is never pure blood. A slave nation, part of being a slave nation is that the slaves are taken advantage of by the masters. That is part of being a slave nation, because slaves have no rights. And therefore, it is known, documented throughout history, that whenever you have slavery, then the slave people are taken advantage of by the overlords, by the masters. This is true of any slavery you want to look into. It's true certainly of American slaves, and it goes back to all slaves. This was true particularly, of course, the women were taken advantage of. But it's also true that the men were taken advantage of homosexually. That goes back to almost all slave nations. That's part of being a slave. of course.
Did Hashem make homosexuals?
What's that?
Does Hashem make homosexuals?
You're asking, does a person naturally, does a man naturally have an interest in another man?
Yeah, they're born like that, so,
It's not.
It has nothing to do with Hashem, is it?
Well, your question is it normal to be born that way? Would a person be normally born that way? Which is a good question. Of course, it doesn't matter as far as the rule is concerned. The Torah does not say that it's prohibited for a man to be attracted to a man. The Torah says it's prohibited for a man to live physically with another man. It's prohibited to act upon that attraction. It's not prohibited to be attracted. So whether
you can't help it then.
They can certainly help it. Anybody can help it. Anybody can help it. You have to abstain. That's part of the rule. That's what the Torah expects, both of Jews and non-Jews. It is absolutely forbidden and prohibited, and it's an abomination for Jews and for non-Jews. It is a horrible, horrible thing for anybody to do, and of course we oppose it 100,000%. We do not tolerate it, and we oppose it without any question. No such thing as rights to do such things. God forbids it. And we forbid it as well. We don't have the power right now to stop it, but we absolutely abhor such behavior. Now, unfortunately, there are people who fall in these areas, but there are people who fall in many areas. We abhor adultery as well, right? I mean, we abhor adultery, even though it's done throughout the United States all the time. But we abhor it, and we do not tolerate it. The slave nation was always taken advantage of in that way. When we were in Egypt, then it would have been logical that we too would have been taken advantage of by the Egyptians. That's why when Hashem counts us in Parshas Pinchas, Hashem counts each family by name, and then it says, for instance, Chanoch, which is his name, Mishpachas HaChanochi, the Chanochi nation. The name Chanoch is repeated in Parshas Pinchas. So you have the name Chanoch. Chanoch, now it's a Chav Sofi, it's an end Chav. I'm going to write it as a regular Chav, because then it's repeated, and Hashem says, Chanoch, the family of HaChanochi, the Chanoch nation. So why does he do that? Because Hashem takes the He and the Yud and surrounds the name Chanoch with Hashem's name to testify that I know that these children are the children of the male Jews, that it is not the Egyptians who lived with the Jewish women. Hashem caused a miracle, literally a miracle, and protected the Jewish women from the Egyptians. Only one Jewish woman ended up living with an Egyptian, and that's the story, of course, of Shlomis Bas Divri and the Mekalel, the one who cursed God at the end of Parshas Emor. But other than that, it didn't happen. The Egyptian women were protected, and it was a miracle, because it shouldn't have happened. The Jewish women were protected when we were in Egypt.
Is there a reason for that with the Egyptians? The Egyptians didn't abuse the women because of certain...
Because Hashem didn't want them to. I mean, the question, you mean, how did he make it natural?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
but that's what happened.
Yeah.
But Yosef, who is the first Jewish slave in Egypt, is not given that miraculous protection. He is accosted first by his master's wife, and we will see later that his master, Potiphar, wanted to live with Yosef as well. To have a homosexual relationship with Yosef. We will see that later. But that is also what went on. So Yosef was attempted to be taken advantage of on two counts. From his master's wife and his master. Yosef resists. It is very likely, although I have not seen this anywhere, it is likely that the reason why we Jews deserved that when we were in Egypt, we were protected from such acts, why it did not happen to the women or the men when we were in Egypt, was because Yosef, who was the very first Jewish slave in Egypt, resisted. And because Yosef resisted at the peril of his life, then he caused for us, he merited for us, that the rest of us would be have a divine protection from this sort of thing. And this is the only time that it ever happened, other than Shlomis Bas Divri, where that was the only exception to the what happened in Egypt. So here Yosef refuses his master's wife's advances. The pasuk goes on, and we have to end. So let's just get to a stopping point here. Pasuk Yod, verse 10. Vayehi kedabro el Yosef yom yom, when she spoke to Yosef day in and day out. V'lo shama eleha, he didn't listen to her. Lishkavetzla, to have a relationship with her. Lios ima, to be with her. So Yosef consistently rebuffed his master's wife. And as I said, this was a great peril to himself, He could have been tortured, he could have been beaten, he could have been put to death.
I heard somewhere that she changed 5 times a day.
Right. She would constantly change her clothing, constantly walk in front of him, constantly do anything to try to seduce him. And remember, he couldn't walk away. This is not a situation, normally you tell somebody, don't go where there's temptation. Right? That's what we say. If you're going to be tempted for the cheeseburger, then don't go where you can smell it. Right? If you tell, or if you're going to be tempted for a particular man or woman, then don't go where they are. Stay away from them. Yosef had no choice. He had to be there. He couldn't get up and leave the room. He was told, polish the silver. He can't stop polishing the silver. He's a slave. And then she, while he's polishing the silver, she's walking back and forth, she's putting on this clothing, putting on that clothing, perfume, whatever it is that she can get his attention. That's what she's doing. And he's sitting there, he can't walk away from it. And yet, he resists and resists and resists and resists and resists and resists and resists. We're going to see, finally, the barriers get broken down after a long time, and that's where you're going to have the point where he gets thrown into jail, as we'll see, and that will be next Sunday night when we will meet, not at 7:30, but at 8 o'clock.